Preston and Steve Fun Size.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Our next guest, we should only be so lucky. Most people are lucky that if they get to do the one thing that they love to do for a living. This guy gets to do the two things that he does for a living.
Lucky man.
And be successful at both of them.
Yeah.
And we've had the pleasure of having him on many times throughout the years. And he's got a gig with his band coming up. Fozzie is going to be playing.
Don't tell me I don't.
At the Brooklyn Bowl this Sunday. The 6 p.m. doors and 7 p.m. show. Tickets available at brooklynbowl.com. Please welcome from Fozzie, our good friend, Mr. Chris Jericho. Yay! Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, guys. Always a pleasure to hang with you. It's not in person, but virtually this time.
Yes, yeah. We'll make it work. Hey, I mentioned in the intro there, Chris, you get to do the two things that you love as a living. If there was a third thing that you could do to throw in there as a living, what else would that be? What do you think?
I always really wanted to open my own bake store.
Your own bake store?
Yeah, you know, like fresh pies, fresh...
Really?
Shut up, really?
Wow.
No. Okay.
I bought it. I bought it hook, line, and sinker.
You know, you remember that footage of Ringo saying he wanted to be a hairdresser? I thought, why not? Yeah.
I would buy one of your pies, Chris.
Yeah.
I'll
tell you what, at this point in time, if I wanted to open my own bakery, I would do it. Right. Nothing could stop me, man.
Nothing's going to stop me.
Don't stop me now.
You know, once you catch the baking bug, nothing can stop it.
Oh, my God.
Especially you can be like the Jera coconut cream.
Ah, there you go. You already have a signature
Did you
pie.
Hear that.
Jera coconut cream.
Yeah,
that's
perfect.
Yeah.
Hey, listen. So you guys are, I believe you teased some new music coming out in the near future, right?
Well, we're working on some stuff right now, and I think one of the things that I've been saying lately is we put out our new record, Boombox, in May. It was a big success. We had three top 10 singles. We played three more of the songs live, and then the other six songs just kind of disappear forever into the Fozzie dead song graveyard. Maybe we'll play one or two of them more live in the future, but I think what we want to start concentrating more on now is just releasing singles. That way, every song that you record gets a shot. You can play it live. You can play it on the radio. It keeps you kind of current when you always have new material coming out. So, yes, we are working on some new stuff, but I think the new business model for the future, at least for the immediate future, is just releasing one song at a time rather than waiting 2 or 3 years to put together a whole record and have it come and go so quickly.
Yeah, Chris, it's interesting that you're bringing this up because we were starting to see artists mention this modus operandi over the past couple of years. And right. And so the notion of, we all remember when we would get an album as a kid or whatever, and it'd be like the two songs we like, and then they would call it filler. And some artists, you know, would deliver maybe five or six. Like you said, you had three hits pop off the last album. And I always thought, man, that had to be, as an artist, you need to be motivated to create the music, and to ever have to do something that's going to be kind of filler seems antithetical to what you as an artist want to do. So this method seems to make more sense to me as well. I mean, is this, you see this being it from here on in for a lot of bands?
Well, the thing is, yeah, you're right, but even worse, what if you have no filler? Like, what if you really believe, like, for example, our last record, I really believe that all 12 songs could have been singles.
Sure.
It just doesn't work that way, right? So I think, you know, listen, I am one of the biggest fans of the album as a musical model as anybody. I mean, I remember being a kid and, you know, taking the bus downtown to the record store, hoping that the new Iron Maiden was out. I said, no, not this week. And you come back next week. Not this week. Then you come back the third week and you heard the new song and you came in, you saw the wall of LP, you know, somewhere in time, there'd be like 50 of them. They're just like, this is amazing. those days are gone. You know, there really isn't even such thing as a record store. I mean, with, you know, possible a few exceptions. Now people listen to music mostly on their phones or what's going on with streaming, and that's song by song. So I think you have to stay ahead of the curve in that, yes, I love the concept of a record. I don't think people have an attention span in the majority to listen to an album from start to finish and listen to the ebbs and flows of, okay, it starts with Battery and it ends with Damage Incorporated. It takes you on a musical ride. You know, I think there will be more bands doing things this way, not just from a consumption reason, but also from a financial reason to buy the song,
yeah,
to listen to the song, to get into it more. So I think it's something that more bands will continue to explore. I know we definitely want to try it this way for a while, for sure.
Yeah, you never want to sound like the, you know, my day. I clearly remember, as I'm sure you do, you do, and Preston and I will discuss this. You get that concept album, that theme album, that, you know, from beginning to end, the Pink Floyd, the, you know, Dark Side of the Moon just had an anniversary. You know, and that thing was, you know, it was like an audio movie, and it was an experience unlike other. But I think you're right. I don't see where you could get traction with something like that these days.
Well, I mean, like we said, you know, people listen on their phones, kids listen to one song at a time, and that's okay. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, you have to adapt with the times. You know, we could, you know, still be putting out 8 tracks if that wasn't the case.
Right.
So I think it is a smart way of doing things. And also too, just from a presence, radio presence, or just, you know, a social media presence, if you're constantly putting out new material, one song every 3 months, for example, or every 4 months, rather than doing one album every 2 years, I think it keeps you in the public eye more.
Yeah.
And there's so much content available. You know, it really is what David Lee Roth used to say, here today, gone later today. So you have to stay in people's minds.
Yeah.
So I think it's something interesting to explore.
Does that mean if you release things that way, does that call for a never-ending tour? You know, like you just are constantly going about because you have new stuff?
You know, I think even that's changed too. You know, it's like nowadays, you know, before you would release a record and then you'd have your 6 month tour and then you'd go away for, I think at this point we all are all constantly touring, just depending on what opportunities you have. I mean, we've gone out every year in the States, probably for the last, you know, not including the pandemic, probably the last 5 years. We've gone to England every year, Australia's every couple of years. So you're basically just going on tour with the opportunities that you have, and you don't necessarily even need new material. They look at AC/DC, they put a Power Up, and obviously AC/DC is an anomaly, but that was 2 years ago. They haven't played one show for it now. They could do a whole Power Up world tour in a year, and no one would even bat an eye. It's just kind of the way that things are in this day and age.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, who else in the wrestling industry is musically inclined that we may not be aware of?
It makes me laugh when people ask that, because, you know, I'm sure there's a couple guys here and there that play. I know that Frankie Kazarian has his own band called Gutter Candy. but most of the time, you know, it's hard to do both, and you have to really commit. I mean, Billy Corgan runs his own wrestling company.
Yes.
To the point where I think they're going to be opening Smashing Pumpkin shows with wrestling matches, which is very interesting. So, you know, to me, there's a lot of guys that play for fun. There are some guys that are making a foray into doing it more seriously. But, you know, there is a lot of dichotomy between wrestling and music, because they're both high-energy forms of entertainment with, you know, very much contingent on what the crowd is doing and how the crowd is reacting. So there's a few here and there, but not a lot.
So we had Danny Cage, the Monster Factory, here in Jersey. There's a show that, you know, that's a reality show, you know, really charismatic guy. And talking about, you know, how a lot of wrestlers get their start. Where was the first step off point where you said, OK, I'm going to commit to this? Where did you really get the bug and really pursue it?
Oh, for me, it was way early on. So when I was a kid, I always wanted to be in a rock and roll band and I wanted to be a wrestler. I'm talking about like 12, 13 years old. And so I started playing in bands in high school. And then when I was 19, I went to wrestling school, and that was it. I never went back. I moved from Winnipeg to Calgary, which is about a 12-hour drive. And there was no other option of not doing this. So right out of the gate. I used to watch wrestling with my grandmother when I was a kid.
It's wild.
I just thought, man, that'd be really cool to get into this business. When I started in 1990, there was no internet to really find out how to get to do this. So you just had to if you watched wrestling, maybe a local wrestling show would have an address where you could write a letter to try and get into their school. Or maybe you read the back of a wrestling magazine and kind of see, like, you know, apartment wrestling and pro wrestling training. Like, which one do you want to do? So it was a little bit harder to get in back in those days. You really had to really look for it and really want to do it. And from day one, since I was 19 years old till to this day, like I said, I wanted to be in a band and I wanted to be a wrestler. And those are the two things that I kind of focused my career on.
Chris, did you look to did Kiss spark anything in you? Because they seem like the perfect, they're like the professional wrestling,
yeah,
of rock, you know, uh-huh, music.
Well, yeah, and the funny thing for me is, and that's why, you know, I have our non makeup 80s Kiss tribute band Quarantine. Like, I got into Kiss in the 80s.
Yeah.
When there was no makeup. Heavens on Fire was the first Kiss song that I ever heard. So wow. I was hugely into Kiss and Paul Stanley, and then worked my way back into the makeup years. But that's why non-makeup Kiss is always my favorite. And when that's I first started wrestling, I wanted to be, you know, a rock and roll frontman. I wasn't the biggest guy back then. You know, most famous wrestlers were 6'8" and 300 pounds. I wasn't that. But I knew I could have the biggest charisma and the biggest personality, and I would take, you know, tips from Paul Stanley and Bruce Dickinson and Mick Jagger and, you know, just the great frontman of our time, David Lee Roth,
yeah,
and bring that frontman lead singer mentality into the wrestling ring to be the party host. And I had the same mindset ever since to this day.
They both feed into each other so well. The fact that you knew exactly that you wanted to do both these things from an early age on speaks to how they synergize. What's the one thing you think is an attribute that, say, a wrestler has that won't serve them well in the world of rock, or vice versa?
Oh, man. In the world of rock?
Yeah.
Maybe wrestling, you know, is a very individual sport. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? It's
yeah.
very much you are on your own. You are the star of the show. You are on the spotlight. In a band, you have to give and take. I mean, anybody that's in a band that's on your show will tell you. I mean, the five-way marriage isn't really the case, but there will be one or two partners that you have in the band. You know, the leaders of the band, the Mick and Keith, the Steve and Joe Perry, the Steve Harris and Bruce Dickinson. Like, there's always kind of two guys in the band that are the visionaries. And that's fine, but you still have to treat the other guys in your band with respect. So I think you have to have much more of a group mentality when you're in a rock and roll band if you want to make it work and if you want to keep your band fairly solid. So
right.
Something more than when you have a revolving door of band members. Some guys don't care, but that does affect the chemistry on stage, the chemistry on the road, and the chemistry of the music you're playing. So when you find a good lineup, you want to kind of really go the extra mile to make sure that everybody is cool, that everybody is happy, and that everybody stays where they need to be to keep the band rolling.
You think there's a similar dynamic in the baking industry?
It really is. I mean, some of those chefs are just real sons of bitches when it comes to ego.
Right. Those baking pricks. Yeah.
The cinnamon shaker is just as important as the guy who puts the pie in the oven.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, for real.
You can see that. You know. You've been to the ringer.
You guys are playing Brooklyn Bowl. It's a cool venue. I've only seen videos, pictures. I haven't been there yet. I'm dying to go at some point. Is bowling in your repertoire at all, Chris?
I used to be a really good bowler when I was a kid in Canada. We used to have bowling as like a lunchroom activity. Other than that, I haven't played in a while.
Wait a second. Are you saying the Canadian schools have bowling alleys in their lunchrooms?
No, you went to the bowling alley.
Oh, I'm like, for Christ's sake, what are we doing wrong in this country?
I went to Hollywood High. We had bowling alleys in every one of our classes, didn't you guys?
Son of a bitch. Between the baking, we're learning so much.
Oh, my God.
No, yeah.
What we're going to do on Sunday is actually the first annual Fozzie Bake and Bowl.
Bake and Bowl. Oh my there God. We go.
We're writing so much good stuff here.
We got to, yeah, this is too good.
God.
Yeah, make sure you own this.
Well, yeah, Fozzie's going to be at Brooklyn Bowl. It's on Sunday, and tickets are on sale. You can get general admission through brooklynbowl.com. There's also VIP stuff. Like, you can get like a lane for 8 people, and you can do 2 hours starting at 6 o'clock, couch, table, all this stuff. Seriously, you can bowl. And
baking classes.
Baking. I don't know about the baking
classes. There's a bowling alley in the place.
Yeah. It's legit.
Well, it's... there you go. Too legit to quit, man. Well, we're excited. This has been a great tour for us. This actually has been our biggest U.S. tour we've ever had on this current run. So it's been a lot of fun. I mean, ever since Judas went gold last year, things have kind of really opened up and gotten even bigger for us. So we're super stoked. Philly's always been a great town for us. You guys have always been very supportive of us. So we're really excited to come in and rock with you again.
Excellent. Chris, it's great to talk to you. We'll send people in the direction of Brooklyn Bowl on Sunday. That's when the show is taking place with Fozzy. Thanks for being here, man.
You what? And what else are you going to do on a Sunday? Right?
That's right. Yes. Nothing else.
Yeah, come on. Exactly. All right, Chris Jericho.
Throw a few lanes. Come watch some great rock and roll.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bacon Bowl. I love it. All right, thanks, Chris. We'll see you, man. Yeah. Take care, bud. By the way.
Bacon Bowls.
Yeah, Bacon Bowls.
Introducing Bacon Bowl.
Oh my God, I love it. He's hilarious, dude.
He's
great. I love Chris. He's and the band is. They played the MMRBQ before.
It was
a lot of fun, man. Badass. Yeah. Oh, thank you to those guys.
Remember, he was. Who did he introduce you to backstage? Was it Tom Morello?
I introduced him to JWoww.
That's it.
That's right.
I did.
That's right.
Jenny Farley, right? Is that her name?
Yeah. I've forgotten her last name.
She was a huge fan.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember.
And she was in the catering area era, and she had mentioned Fozzy, and I had met her. I'm like, oh, Chris is right down the hall. You want to go meet him? So I introduced JWoww.
Look at you, brokering star power.
To Chris Jericho, which was pretty cool. And he may have introduced me to somebody, too, and I don't remember. There's so many MMRBQs.
Yeah.
It's hard to
so many memories.
Yeah.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.